Well, hello again there, folks. So I wanted to do a quick video. A few people asked me to do a video on the something that I mentioned on Twitter, but something that it's brought up a few times, but also just a sort of basic, straightforward, not particularly complicated video on power and how it works with the power structure in the West, having all of these different minority groups hanging onto it. Because I think there's different ways that people understand this, and I think there's people, I mean, I think most of the people here will be familiar with the basic concepts as we see them, but like there's other narratives out there. If you think that the left or the mainstream sort of shitlib media, they've got their own perception of how power functions in the country, which is something completely different from ours. And I thought it would be interesting to just dig into it a little bit on a sort of back to basics refresher style video. And what actually sort of led to this was this tweet that I did, where I was pointing out to a person of diversity, let's say, that actually they weren't oppressed, or they weren't like their understanding of power just seemed to be something completely fantastical. It just didn't line up with reality whatsoever. And I said the because she was saying that the let's say the natives, I've got to be careful for YouTube, the native population were being manipulated by the elites to use the migrant populations as scapegoats. I don't buy that one for one bit. There's billions. There's a £1 billion industry making sure that that doesn't happen, and that's coming straight from the top as well. And I said the pawns are the immigrants themselves, who are happy to become a client group of corrupt power structures in the West. The triangulation is not natives plus elites versus immigrants. It's elites plus immigrants versus natives. Or, and this is where we get into the sort of the meat of it. To borrow heavily from Bertrand de Jouvenel's On Power here, or high low versus middle, they are then in this framing the pawn. And so what we're really talking about is the power structure. And obviously I'm really going to be focusing on Britain, but it's the same across the West. It's the same dynamic which has been imposed upon us. And what I think is interesting is that I came across this kind of boomer sort of meme. I mean, it looks dated. You can tell by the people who are on the right side of it. It's quite an old and quite a dated one. But it said feudalism then and now, medieval feudalism and corporate feudalism. And I suspect this is actually probably a sort of left-leaning, perhaps. A bit of a Marxoid slant on it. And the idea is they're saying actually the power structure hasn't changed. The faces have changed and the names of the roles have changed, but we're still living in this sort of feudal society. I think this is maybe 10 years old. It was probably not quite, it's probably more true now than what it was when it was made. And this is where it gets interesting, is when you look at the relationship between the top and the bottom on this hierarchy. But we'll come back to that later. Let's just have a look at this headline, because I've had this file kicking around for quite a while, as a video which I wanted to make. And so this was a headline from, I think, back in February or something. Ukrainian women are refusing to live in Islamic neighborhoods in the UK, citing safety concerns. And a lot of people got a kick out of that. A lot of people thought that was amusing. And the reason why they found it was amusing was because at that time, the Ukrainian women were being brought in as refugees because of the war. And they then hadn't actually been through the process of sort of social engineering and political correctness. And they were showing, let's just say, in-group preference, or what would usually be classed as racism. And this puts the power structure in an uncomfortable spot, because really what you've got is two of their protected groups. It's unusual that you would find Ukrainian women as being part of the protected group, but it is because of the importance of the war. They're part of a different narrative and a different thing that's going on. Usually, you wouldn't have white conservative women of that were being protected in that way, but in this particular instance, they were because of foreign policy concerns, and they found themselves at odds with an already existing protected. I mean, these people in something like the Equalities Act. These are literally called protected groups. So the reason why we thought that was interesting was because we think, well, which way is the power structure going to go? Who will they decide to back up in that scenario? Well, whereas you see that we're talking about two client groups of power, being at loggerheads. But this isn't actually how the mainstream wants us to think of this at all. I've jumped the gun a little bit. So if we look at the standard narrative that we exist in, which is forced down our throats every day, it's one in which the sort of Western liberal democracy has these minority groups who are need special protection because they are always exposed to being persecuted or in some prejudice of the majority population, the majority value set will make their lives uncomfortable and make them, persecute them or whatever it happens to be, restrict their life chances and all of the rest of them. And of course, if this is the standard left-wing sort of interpretation of all of these dynamics, and it's completely false. It's just not true whatsoever. Now, the right wing often will say that the reality is the complete opposite of the situation, and that they are then they are themselves sort of persecuted by minorities. But you'll notice that both of these instances have got something missing. And what I mean is that the minority, if you look at the politically correct sort of framing of things, where everybody's tripping over themselves to be nice and for not say the wrong thing, not say anything racist, not say anything homophobic or trans, or it just goes on and on and on. So then you get this kind of tyranny of the minority, as we will see. But I think both of these sort of infographics are missing a key component here, and that's when we inject power, as represented here by the Crown, which is the government, and law. And so this then becomes, to go back to the original tweet, this is how that person was from wherever she was from. That's how she interprets life in the West, where power plus the majority are pushing down upon and in opposition to minority groups. You'll see this as a frequent left-wing term, a frequent sort of left-wing strategy is or thinking is that they will say the migrants are scapegoated. So power uses migrants, it scapegoats migrants for all kinds of ills, unemployment, economic problems, crime on the streets, whatever. Then the way they look at it is that power then uses the majority to use the migrants as a scapegoat, which is just not true again, because if it was, you wouldn't have all of these laws protecting them, and they wouldn't be bringing them in the first place, really. Like it seems as if they've just because these groups that they protect are increasing all of the time. Then you find that in actual fact, power's got a different relationship with these minorities. So if we move on again, I think this is more accurate. And what we see is power at the top using the bottom in a pincer movement to undermine the middle. And this will say, well, okay, why would they do that? And here is where we get into a little bit of Bertrand de Jouvenel's more realistic and sober analysis. Because it goes back, you can go back to the Middle Ages, for example, and you can see that the king or the sovereign, you would expect, which is what I'll get into here, you'd expect that the king and the nobles, another left-wing sort of frame, would be that the king and the nobles were oppressing the peasants and the plebs. This isn't actually the case, as de Juvenal says. In popular imagination, a monarchy keeps its employments for the nobles and excludes them from them, the common people. In fact, the exact opposite happens. It endures the services of the great only so far as it stays under aristocratic tutelage, but it calls on the services of the common people so far as it aims at becoming absolute. So, in other words, if power uses the bottom rung against the middle, or against its immediate adversaries, the nobles will pose, or the knights, or the elites, other elites pose more of a problem to the sovereign than do the people at the bottom. So the power will then use the people at the bottom against the middle. And de Juvenal says, the most total power that Europe in the days of the ancient regime ever knew was that of the Ottoman Turks, and were, if you please, did their grand seigneur find his most faithful soldiers in his surest servants, not among the Turkish nobility, the companions of his conquests, of whose pride and turbulence he went in fear? He recruited his janissaries among the subject Christian races. To them, too, he went for his administrators and even for his grand vizier. This way, he raised above the natural aristocracy a statocracy composed of men who had nothing and owed him everything. So what he's done then is employ outsiders against his own population. He's brought up from the bottom. So here we see the pincer movement coming in. The sovereign will create client groups to use and stabilize his own power and authority against the middle of the society. Now, when we then step a little bit further into this, we can put it this way. Power is using minority groups against the majority in order to safeguard its own power. And if you think of it just in a standard sense, if and you'll notice that it's increasing all of the time, the amount of my protected classes, literally protected classes and the equality rights, the client groups. What they really are client groups of power, and they are here in our society. Our equivalent would be the sort of white natives, in the middle. Or then come, you've got the there are you've got the power from the top attacking them, and then power's using the minority groups to attack them from the bottom, so they get it on both sides. This is, of course, completely the opposite to what we are told on mainstream media. I said it would be a kind of a basic bit video, but de Juvenal gets into this quite a bit, and I think once you've actually understood this, you can cut through a lot of the nonsense. Because what you're then going to do in this frame is completely remove the idea that these client groups are in any way oppressed. They're not. If they were an issue for power, power wouldn't be allowing them in anyway. So what we see is this is straightforward top bottom versus middle dynamic. So I just want to really make a quick back to basics video, but in order to illustrate this point, the most perfect example of this dynamic that we can see in Britain is the issue of the grooming gangs. So if you look at this from the perspective of the mainstream, if from the perspective of something like white privilege theory, it would have been impossible. Let's just say the institutional racism actually existed, then the idea that you would have these men brought in from elsewhere who would do those things and just generally behave in that manner towards those girls, then it would have been an impossibility. The entire power structure would have reacted against it. It wouldn't have been covered up. People wouldn't have got lenient sentences. Nothing of the sort would have happened that actually did. So once again, like one of the reasons why I think the main sort of shitlib center is uncomfortable with is that issue is because precisely because it exposed the reality, and the reality is the working class white girls who were abused were not a client group of power, and the men who the imported men were. And so what happened was, if you look at the way the system reacted to that, which was to play it down, do workshop sessions, try and come up with narratives which played down how toxic it all was, and a lot more besides, you can see that the English girls were kind of worthless to the power structure, whereas the wider project was everything. They were sacrificed on the altar of multiculturalism, essentially. And the reason for that is because they weren't clients of power, but the groups, the perpetrators, were. And so when you just look at it purely objectively, there's no other conclusion that you can come to than the fact that they were protected as clients of the state, of the power in Britain. And so this is a much more realistic assessment. If kind of a bit of a sober analysis, because you then have to say, okay, once we've taken this into consideration, you then lead on to the next step, which is like, what do we do about it? And you get into other theories which are beyond the scope of this sort of quick video, which is to do with rival elites and these kinds of things. So I just wanted to sort of answer a point and a few people raised in regards to that tweet that I did, getting a little bit more into the dynamic at play, because people were saying like it seems so obvious once you get it, but how can I explain this to my normie friends or whatever? So that was the aim of this video. I hope I did a good job. It's basically that power has an interest in creating client groups which it will protect, which are going to attack the demographic block, which would potentially be a dangerous adversary. There's also a wider point at its power expands because of the laws which have to be brought in. Its power expands every time there's a new hate speech law, every time there's some new snoopers law. When you get into the managerial side of it in HR departments, where everybody has to say the right things, everybody has to think the right things. What this does is increase, if you imagine that none of that actually existed and we had this kind of organic, healthy society still, none of that would be needed. And so, in a sense, power would be restrained by having a traditional society like we used to have. So what's happened is that all of these different mechanisms of the political correctness are ways in which power can expand itself into areas which would, in the once upon a time, be unheard of. And a primary way you can do that is with these client groups. So there you go, folks, and I'll see you next time.